Let's begin with a bow. So welcome everyone. I know a lot of people were away for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So welcome back. And it's good to see everyone here. So tonight we'll be working with something called Lojong, which I'll explain in a minute. So this is module 2 of our series on compassion, and we're continuing with the book by Pema Chodron called The Places That Scare You. And hopefully you saw online, that's where we post the readings for each week and what we'll be doing. So I hope people are able to find that. It's under the education section. So we're going back to revisit a chapter we didn't cover. It's chapter 5, and then we'll also cover chapter 15, which was in the reading for tonight. We had 3 chapters there towards the section on chapter 14, 15, and 16. But we'll be covering chapter 5 and 15 tonight. And these two chapters are about the teachings of Lojong. And again, this book is in a way a survey of some teachings that are extremely profound, or let's say they are very profound, and you could actually have a whole course on many of these teachings. And that's actually true with Lojong. It's a very extensive practice. So tonight will be just an introduction, and you can read more if you want, and I have some titles of books that I'll point out to you at the end. So the word Lojong is a Tibetan word, and there are 2 parts. L-O is lo, and that means mind. And the second part, jong, J-O-N-G, means training. So together that's mind training. And this is actually 59 slogans, you could say, that are about this topic of Lojong, ways of training the mind. So Lojong is a practice that reverses our tendency to cherish the self in the same way that some of the other practices we've been doing on compassion actually help us to undercut our self-clinging and self-cherishing and open our heart of compassion to others. This practice also works in that way as well. So the quality that we often, the way we approach things is often me first. It seems to be just the way we're wired in some way. But this practice makes us think twice about how we approach others and how we approach the world. So it's a practice because we're being asked to do something that's usually not the way we approach situations. For example, there's one slogan here that says, drive all blames into one. And you could guess that one might be yourself. And if you guess that, you're right. And usually when something happens to me, the first reaction is blame somebody else. You know, usually blame Michael. You know, poor Michael. He always gets it. But it's always somebody else's fault, right? That's what it feels like at first. But this practice really, it turns it around and says, take the blame. So you can hold confusion at the moment about that, because I know that can be confusing. But it's basically, that shows you what we're doing in terms of reversing our usual tendency. So these slogans are beyond contemplations. They can be contemplated. In fact, they're rather obscure in many ways and hard to fathom in that they there is a 3 of this and the 4 of this, and it doesn't make much sense unless you have commentary. So the books that have commentary really explain them. So one way to work with them is to read commentaries and also to use them in daily life as regular practice, which would be they come with all the slogans come on these cards. We weren't able to find our set. I think we do have a set. It was lost in some box.
We'll arrange to have a set.
Okay.
For anybody who wants.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Michael Fagan will bring one so you can see. So they're cards like about this size, and they sit up on a stand, and you can change them daily, and that will help you remember them. You can pick one and work with it for a week or a couple days or whatever. But the idea is that you start to understand what they mean and they start to penetrate the way you live your life. So this may sound rather obscure, so we'll go into them more. So let's look at chapter 5 if you have that. Otherwise, I will read it anyway. So chapter 5 is called Warrior Slogans. And in this way, warrior means, it's similar to the word bodhisattva, which is awakened being. So it's not warrior in terms of war or making war, but in being courageous. So there's a quality of being courageous when we step into these practices. So here is the first one that we'll work, we see on this page, on page 31. It says, in all activities, train with slogans. So this is the first one we see here, and it's a mind training slogan of Atisha. So Atisha was from India, and from the 11th century in India. And he brought these teachings, these mind training teachings, to Tibet. Was he the one that had the tea boy?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Well, that comes later, but the tea boy wasn't explained here. So this is a typical Tibetan joke. It may not be all that funny, but the story is that Atisha felt that he had heard stories about the Tibetans being very polite and tamed and non-confrontational and basically kind and all the things you could imagine, which would be wonderful. So he figured, well, in order to practice these slogans, which require difficult people and difficult circumstances, he would bring his tea boy along with him to Tibet. Well, needless to say, when he got to Tibet, he found that Tibetans were just like everybody else, irritating, difficult to work with, and so on, just like people in our lives. So the story is that he realized he didn't really need to bring this tea boy. He had plenty of chances to work with the slogans, no matter where he was.
But Tibetans still tell this joke.
They do. Well, they think it's hilarious. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't translate that well. So he emphasized the Lojong teachings, and these are teachings for training the mind. And as Pema says, it works with what we most dislike about ourselves or what we most dislike about our lives or our circumstances. And these are all the things that actually become the path to awakening. So actually, we always feel like if I could just get it together and have the right situation and have all my little ducks in order, I would feel everything would be fine. But these teachings say, no, it's fine. Whatever difficult circumstances we have, that's what we can work with. And that's what trains us, and that's how we can train in the world. So as Elise mentioned, Pema talks in here about this story about how these slogans became more available in the world. So Atisha really didn't teach very much, and they, in terms of making them widely available, they were kept secret. So Jamie, do you want to read this little section on 31, beginning there, and then and through the first paragraph on the next page.
For some time.
It ends with, they could help anyone.
Okay. For some time after the death of Atisha, these teachings were kept secret, passed on only to close disciples. They did not become widely known again until the 12th century, when the Tibetan Geshe Chakawa organized them into 59 pithy slogans. These sayings are now known as the Lojong slogans, or the slogans of Atisha. Becoming familiar with these slogans and bringing them to mind throughout our lives is a valuable bodhicitta practice. Geshe Chikawa had a brother who was contemptuous of the Buddhist teachings and was always giving him a hard time. However, when many lepers were studying with Chikawa became cured, his brother began to get very interested in what they were being taught. Hiding outside Chikawa's door, the irascible brother started listening to the teachings on using uncomfortable circumstances as the path. When Chikawa began to notice his brother becoming less irritable, more flexible, and more considerate, he realized that his brother must be listening to the mind training teachings and applying them. It was then that he decided to teach the Lojong slogans far more publicly. He figured that if they could help his brother, they could help anyone.
I love it. So then he started teaching, you know. And so I find it so amazing, these teachings from, you know, the 11th century, the 8th century, whatever, have been passed down, and they still are very relevant to us today. But you'll be the one to decide that for yourself. So, one thing I was thinking about also in terms of the slogans, as we said, they're very pithy. And when you think about conditions in Tibet in the 11th century, people lived in very rough conditions. Probably many people never learned to read. They moved from place to place in tents. So it was a nomad life, a tent culture. And what I thought is that the slogans are something people could carry with them very easily. You can remember them if you study them, and they're short. And I thought, it's like the slogans were an app for the ancient world, because it's, you know, it's something you carry with you, and it's not hard to access. So the first one here we can talk about is always meditate on whatever provokes resentment. And that actually is slogan 49, and that you can find on page 32. So Pema starts with that one, always meditate on whatever provokes resentment. She says, ordinarily we are swept away by habitual momentum and don't interrupt our patterns even slightly. When we feel betrayed or disappointed, does it occur to us to practice? Usually not. But right there in the midst of our confusion is where the slogans of Atisha are most penetrating. The easy part is to familiarize ourselves with them. More challenging is to remember to apply them. To remember a slogan right in the midst of irritation, for example, always meditate on whatever provokes resentment, might cause us to pause before acting out our resentment by saying something mean. Once we are familiar with it, a slogan like this will spontaneously pop into our mind and remind us to stay with the emotional energy rather than acting it out. So if you really go deeper into this slogan, I was thinking about it in terms of the word resentment. And in a way, it's what it brings up for me is sort of this beginning of a sentence. Why am I the one who always? So it's so it could be, I think of these people at the Unitarian Church, some people belong to all these different committees, but the committees actually have to set up the coffee hour, and I'm thinking, this would be a perfect slogan for these people that belong to like five committees. Why am I always the one who has to set up for coffee hour? So that's Atisha. So it's sort of like going to look deeper. What's under the feeling? Is it not being valued? Is it feeling taken advantage of or not recognized? Or is it feeling belittled? So the slogans encourage us to go deeper and to, instead of like jumping to the habitual pattern of taking the storyline and cranking up some emotional response, it's really to let go of the story and go deeper and see what's happening underneath it. So it's to own the feelings and experience them in your body and investigate, and then even begin asking questions. Is this an old story? Is this a habitual pattern, a usual way I'm reacting? But then the next step is to ask, how can I interrupt the habitual patterns? Now that I've stopped, or at least I've gotten a little window here or a little tiny gap, then what happens next? So this ability to even notice this moment of awareness comes from our shamatha practice. So it comes from our meditation, because having that space just to meditate and take time to see what goes on in our mind, we start to notice the gaps. And the more we practice, the more that space in our mind is there. We can carry that awareness into our everyday life. So when we notice that we actually can notice, and a lot of that comes from our meditation practice. So meditation gives us the space to see clearly, but it takes a lot of time for this to arise, or it might arise suddenly. I don't know what your situation is, but generally it takes time for the practice to really penetrate us so that we are able to interrupt the momentum of our usual habitual patterns. And in fact, these slogans are all about interrupting our patterns. So I'd like to go on now to this section on train in the three difficulties, which is, let's see, so this is on page 33 at the top. Would someone like to read this paragraph, the first full paragraph beginning with the slogan? It's kind of short. Anybody? Marty? Okay.
The slogan, train in the three difficulties, gives us instruction on how to practice, how to interrupt our habitual reactions. The three difficulties are: 1, acknowledging our neurosis as neurosis; 2, doing something different; and 3, aspiring to continue practicing this way.
Right. So this is actually how we work with these habitual patterns when they come up. So the first, and I guess I wanted to point out that these are called the train in the three difficulties, because they are hard. They are difficult. So it's not train in the three answers. It's not really an answer. It's noticing the difficulty of what we're attempting to do. So the first one is acknowledging our neurosis as neurosis. So that's really seeing what's going on. And the second is doing something different, which I think is pretty interesting. So Pema says here, just do anything. Anything that's non-habitual will do. Even sing and dance or run around the block. That sounds good. When I'm ready to go for the fifth cookie, maybe I should go out the back door or something. But this is exactly what she's talking about. We do anything that doesn't reinforce our crippling habits. The third difficult practice is to then remember that this is not something we do just once or twice. So the third practice is aspiring to continue practicing in this way. Interrupting our destructive habits and awakening our heart is the work of a lifetime. I thought the next paragraph was really helpful. Would anyone like to read that? Jerry, do you want to read that one?
Yeah, which one?
Starts with, on page 33, with in essence. This is about the process, and this is really the key of working with Lojong altogether.
In essence, the practice is always the same. Instead of failing prey, a chain reaction of revenge or self-hatred, we gradually learn to catch the emotional reaction and drop the storylines. Then we feel the bodily sensation completely. One way of doing this is to breathe into your heart. By acknowledging this emotion, dropping whatever story we are rolling ourselves about it, and feeling the energy of the moment, we cultivate compassion for ourselves. Then we could take this a step further. We could recognize that there are millions who are feeling the way we are and breathe in the emotion for all of us with the wish that we could all be free of confusion and limiting habitual reactions. When we can recognize our own confusion with compassion, we can extend that compassion to others who are equally confused. This step of widening the circle of compassion is where the magic of bodhicitta training lies.
Thank you. So she expands this actual instruction even further. So this looks familiar to us, I think, in terms of expanding and thinking about all the people who are also caught in this same type of habitual reaction. So this again expands it beyond our personal situation. And this one last paragraph, I'll just read this on page 34 at the top. This is very important as well. The irony is that what we most want to avoid in our lives is crucial to awakening bodhicitta. These juicy emotional spots are where a warrior gains wisdom and compassion. Of course, we'll want to get out of those spots far more often than we'll want to stay. That's why self-compassion and courage are vital. Staying with pain without loving kindness, which is the Maitri, is just warfare. So I'd like now to turn to chapter 15, which is on page 83. It's called Strength. So the Lojong slogan here is practice the five strengths, the condensed heart instruction. So these five are actually laid out in the first paragraph. The five strengths are strong determination, familiarization with the bodhicitta teachings and practices, the seed of goodness that is found in every living being, the practice of reproach, and the power of aspiration. These are five ways that a warrior increases confidence and inspiration. So the first one is strong determination. So this is this commitment to use our lives to dissolve the indifference, aggression, and grasping that separate us from other people. And any situation where there's something uncomfortable is an opportunity to wake up. So the first one is determination to keep opening the mind no matter what our situation is. And the second one is familiarization, which is getting to know the slogans and taking them to heart and being willing to just let them work in us. The third is the seed of goodness. And this is the seed of bodhicitta. And we've talked about that word before. And again, that is awakened heart or awakened heart mind. So this is actually remembering or practicing this strength of remembering this potential that we have within us for awakened mind, heart. So to remember this reservoir or this seed of goodness that's always available, that we can actually water this seed and help it to grow. And the fourth one, again, is reproach. And again, she said that we should mix the reproach with Maitri. So it's not to put ourselves down or say, oh, there you go again, you know. You're always doing this over and over again. But the question is, have I done this before? Sort of this inquiry, rather than this bad person, you know, sort of scolding yourself. But this, have I ever done this before? In other words, notice the pattern, and notice the more we can notice the pattern, we can actually get smarter and not get hooked as often. And the fifth one is aspiration. And again, this is like in the other ones we were talking about. The last one also is aspiration. So we can aspire to arouse bodhicitta and free ourselves from neurosis. So I'd like to just look now at the slogans on page 125. They're in the appendix. What I want to point out is on page 126, the slogan there under relative bodhicitta slogans, number 7, is sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. Does that sound familiar to anyone? And this is our Tonglin practice, right? So if you want to know where that comes from, it comes from the Lojong slogans, or at least that's where we see it presented in this fashion. My guess is they figured it out, and probably they use that practice many different ways, I would imagine. But it shows up in the Lojong slogans. Sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. So if you just sort of glance through these, I'll just read one more and see what comes up for you. Be grateful to everyone. Doesn't that sound impossible? I mean, it's so all-encompassing. It's be grateful to everyone. So it's so when you're stuck in traffic and this person cuts you off, it's sort of like the first reaction is, and it's flipping that. And can we just be grateful? And in other words, sort of you take into consideration what that person might be going through. A couple weeks ago, I was at the swimming pool at the Y, and I had this, you get your own lane until someone else shows up, and then you have to share it, and there's sort of a method. Everyone usually starts at one end of the pool, and they nod, and then you nod, and then they get in. So I was at the far end of the pool, and I had already arranged with this other woman. She was going to share with me, and she just hadn't gotten in the water. And I look up, and this guy is right there in that corner, and I was trying to let him know that someone's down there, and he was like, no, I'm here. This is my lane. And so I started getting really irritated with him, and then I thought, well, that's sad, you know. He can't even be generous enough to actually let her have the lane. So it sort of, and then I just sort of just let it go. So I think if you can take whatever situation, that's what this is about. Be grateful to everyone, because everyone teaches us something. What am I grateful for?
To him.
Well, I guess I'm grateful that I noticed, you know, that he gave me an opportunity to practice. At first, I was irritated and frustrated, and I thought, you know, it was very unkind. I was making a lot of judgments about him and opinions, and, you know, maybe he just didn't get it. Yeah. So, you know, I could drop it. Was that a good answer, Michael?
Is that the visual?
It might be. Oh, so let's open this up to her questions and see what people have to say. And if some of these, and we can share the book if people want to pass it around, or, you know, if you want to look with someone.
What is the three objects, three poisons, and three seeds of virtue?
Well, the three poisons are passion, aggression, and ignorance. We use, and we've talked about passion being attachment, not like excitement over something. Mm-hmm. But so the three poisons are passion, or as I said, attachment, aggression, which is striking out, and ignorance, which is ignoring. And the first one is the three. What number is that one?
Number eight.
Okay. The three objects are what you're could be fixating on for your attachment, or angry at for your, you know, aggression, or ignoring for your ignorance.
You're applying the three poisons to
whatever your
object of concern.
Right. Okay. Your objects of concern. And the three seeds of virtue is that you can transform those.
Oh,
right. Do you, anyone want to say more about that? Do you have the three seeds of virtue? Or Michael? Or anyone? Okay, you can read it in there.
Well, we're going to put both books online.
Yeah.
These are two excellent references if you actually want to understand them. Because it says three this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to mean anything without an explanation.
Right, so actually referring to the books, this first book Michael's mentioning is Training the Mind and Cultivating Loving Kindness by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. So that's a very complete guide to this. And the second one is Start Where You Are by Pema Chodron, where she goes into every slogan one by one. So as Michael said, if you get three of this and five of this, it doesn't mean anything, but the explanation is here.
So it says here, the three objects are friends, enemies, and neutrals. The three poisons are passion, aggression, and ignorance or delusion. And the three seeds of virtue are the absence of passion, aggression, and ignorance.
Uh-huh.
So it's not all that complicated, really.
Okay.
It's the reaction, the thing you're reacting to, and the transformation of it.
Okay.
So much of this is tied into the Tonglen practice.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is, when you do the Tonglen practice and you get introduced to it and you go through the stages of Tonglen, you're actually enacting the process of your instigating this process of opening up to the Absolute, which is one of the five major slogans, which is very important and worth contemplating, and we're happy to discuss that with you as we go forward. Please bring questions up if you're reading this material and you're confused about what it might mean. But and so then these issues that come up, are they fodder for actually engaging on the path? And so in the sense of being grateful to them, you realize that they're essential to your own process of going forward and waking up. We actually need irritating experiences. We actually need dark forces to help us become alert first and awake and actually open our hearts to compassion. If we don't have those things, we tend to fall back into a default mode of basically sleepiness or state of just, you know, kind of superficial bliss. Everything's moving forward until I hit the wall. I'm not going to blame the wall. You know, the Tonglen practice, which is a kind of thing that as we get further into this, you could consider doing on a daily basis for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. We did introduce that earlier. Is a way to sharpen that process so that when you're off the cushion and you're actually in an ordinary or other kind of circumstance, you can begin to catch it. You know, you can actually begin to see how I can pull it right. I can apply it right here. Somebody is arguing with you, throwing kind of aspersions at you, trying to make you feel bad. And, you know, it's a way of just sort of absorbing those and letting them go into space without anybody being hurt. Because the real thing we've been sort of moving forward very quickly on, if I may expound a little bit on this, is that we start with the notion that it's our own ego that's preventing us from really understanding the real nature of the world and being able to be effectively engaged with it. So all of these earlier meditation practices are supposed to help us do that, to loosen it up, to expand it and make it possible.
Thank you.
That all also sounds a lot like quote, personal growth experiences. Like, oh, I learned so much when somebody died or whatever. Sounds personal growth experiences can be fewer and far between sometimes.
Well, it's the things we don't want, you know. But the point is, we're always confronted by things we don't want. So it's sort of taking that as fuel.
Instead of, well, because it's like, otherwise, you're like, oh, man, I was having a great day, and then this bad thing happened to me, as opposed to, well, everyday stuff happens to you, and you're going to make it like that's a terrible thing, or it's, that's what happened. I was thinking about when I teach school, like, the kids who are most challenging, like, oh, this is a really good opportunity because, you know, they're not... They usually are not doing it because, oh, now I can get at least really pissed off. This would be fun. Although some of them do. And sometimes for some kids, that's what they do.
They do, yeah.
And so it's when you take that, like you look and say, oh, you're really trying to get me angry, aren't you? And they're so mad at you for that. That's not what they want. They really want, you know.
They want the reaction.
It's like, you know, almost just turn it back on the other person and say, it's like, you know, here's what you're doing.
Right.
You know, I can see it.
Okay.
I have a really basic question that I haven't been able to figure out yet, because this is all very new to me. And that is, when we were getting the meditation practice, I mean instruction, the idea was that you would, like, you'd be sitting, and when thoughts would come in, you could kind of take them and put them aside and say, that's a thought, that's a thought. So if you're putting all these things aside, then what's the meditating on about? I mean, is this a silly question?
No. It was actually, it's a very good question. And actually, Craig asked that 2 weeks ago, I think, or a week before. And it's a very good question. There are different practices we're teaching. So... The meditation, shamatha practice, is on the cushion. You're working with taming your mind. And therefore, you're noticing the thoughts, and you're coming back to your breath. So you're kind of drawing, you're bringing yourself into one spot, and rather than your mind is wandering everywhere. And then we're working also with contemplations. So when we worked with four limitless ones, we were bringing up particular situations and remembering someone who was sick or whatever, and thinking about offering relief to that person. And Tong Lin is also working with using our mind to bring up certain situations. So it's more of a contemplation. And the Lojong is an active, it's a contemplation, and you're learning what it means, so it's more of a study process almost, too. You're studying something, because you need the commentary to understand it. And then you're trying to bring it up in the context of a situation. So you're actively using it within your daily life. Does that make sense? Yeah. And Mary, you had something earlier.
I was going to ask, is it a good habit to see everybody as a Buddha in order to have compassion?
Yes.
Good, yes. It's
a great habit.
It's a great habit.
Yes. Does that really...
Yes.
Is that
well, that sums it up, doesn't it? It really does, because... We say that everyone has Buddha nature. Everyone has the seed of awakening. And if you're able to actually see that in other people or
if you,
say that...
if you rub up against, like, the guy in the pool...
Yeah.
Okay, so this Buddha is trying to teach me how to handle myself when I'm dealing with someone who's aggravating me in the pool.
I wouldn't say that. No, I wouldn't put it that way. I would just say, I mean, it's just more straightforward than that.
It's just more underneath all his dirt, He has the same Buddha.
Just like me, he wants to be happy. He's just trying to get his lane, like me, you know. We're all fighting for our lane.
That's the 60th lotion.
Right. Right. Drop your agenda. Maybe that's the 60th.
So it's not. So I guess I maybe some. What I'm trying to say too is that so it's not assuming that there is some deep wisdom that's coming at you through this man.
No.
That's helping you.
No, you're not laying a trip on anything. There's no trip here. It's very straightforward. You see something, you're irritated, right? That's the first.
That's real.
You're irritated. Yes. That's real.
Yes.
And then, but you don't have to. You don't have to buy that altogether. You could actually go beneath that, and maybe consider their point of view. For instance, you know, he didn't acknowledge that that side of the pool wasn't the way everybody else gets in the water. You know, he has his own path to getting in and whatever, you know. So I could be generous, you know. I could actually be more generous. And it's not a big deal, really. So, you know, I wouldn't think right off the bat to visualize him as a Buddha or think about that, but I think you've got a good point there.
No, that's pretty advanced.
That's advanced.
I mean, of course, it's great. And in fact, that's often a sign of really progressing where everything that arises is the face of the Buddha itself. And you recognize that it takes some very specific training. It's not just a philosophical imposition. It's like really seeing it that way.
Right.
And so then you could sort of recognize the incredible craziness that goes on in this world is all fundamentally some primordial wisdom, which is inconceivable. It's not like, oh, I can figure it out. It's not because we can figure it out. It's not something to figure out. Mm. It's much more direct than that.
Okay.
Yeah,
Jane.
Can I ask
about
another one? Okay, so looking at 19, all Dharma agrees at one point.
Okay.
I like that phrasing of that a lot, but
what's it mean? Look it up. Michael, look it up.
What is the one point?
What is the one point? She's asking.
Non-self.
Nonsense.
Well, what does it say in the book?
Okay, let's. Well, this is good. This is a good test. Because it's interesting, you know, we read these and study them, and then, oh, you know, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years go by, and you forget them. So it's good. You have to keep coming back.
All teachings are basically a way of subjugating or shedding our ego. And depending on how much the lesson of the subjugation of ego is taking hold in us, that much reality is presented to us. All dharmas that have been taught are connected with that. There is no other dharma. No other teachings exist, particularly in the teachings of the Buddha.
So that's like driving all blame into one. Kind of similar. I mean, you don't exist, then it's not a problem. You're not a masochist.
Doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, Buddhist teachings are boring. Because right? They only have one thing to say, non-self. A million ways to say it.
And yet I'm surprised at you look at the ones for point six, there's a whole lot of don'ts in there. And don't ponder
point
others.
Six. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't ponder others' weak points.
Oh, is that what it
That's
means?
What it means.
As opposed to try, it sounds like don't try empathy.
No, don't ponder their weak points. Like,
okay,
you know.
Try
right, you know, like sort of be gleeful that, you know, whatever, they're forgetful or whatever. Their weak point.
So is it also, you're not making excuses. It's,
no.
It's just bending in the wind a little more? Or, I mean, you're trying to find the calm and the peace inside of you in any circumstance.
Right.
So in doing so, if you're looking at, I'm going back to the guy in the pool.
Okay.
He's really stuck on
yes,
this.
I'm stuck in the pool. He was annoying, But yet you were, well, maybe he had a bad day, or maybe he's trying to... So that feels a little like excuse-making. I mean, you're making up a story in your head, right, to try to give you peace about how to handle the circumstance, correct? Is it a mental sort of...
It doesn't feel like that to
no?
me. It was like, there he was, and at first I was really irritated because he interrupted my plan. I was being very nice to this woman, and we had it all worked out.
Right.
You know, I felt good about myself. I was sharing my,
you know,
I had it worked out, you know, and, you know, it built up my own, you know, attitude here, you know, and then there he was, and he was an obstacle. And then that, I noticed some of the arising of the irritation. So that's what I'm pointing out. I noticed the arising, the irritation, and then then I realized I could just let it go. And it wasn't, you know, that's just how he was. So
okay.
I wasn't trying to...
You didn't fill in with a story.
No.
Okay.
No, there wasn't.
Maybe this isn't about him.
It isn't about
no,
him. It's about me.
Yeah,
it's about
you.
My
it's about your fault. I'm going back to the beginning of the class. I listen. I knew what she said.
Michael, drive all blames into Michael. Well, that's, Pema has this, someone wrote to her, or probably it was in a teaching, and they said, well, what is this about Juan? You know, why don't you like him? And she's like, what? And she, this person heard, drive all blames into Juan. So she writes about that over and over. It's totally hysterical. But it's all. But the thing is, it's not really about what happens out there. It's all about how we deal with situations and how we see it. So we can either get hooked, which means we, you know, the energy, we're grabbed by the energy,
right,
and we build it up more and more and get more angry or more whatever it is. And stir up everything. Or we could actually catch the arising of that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going further down that path, we could actually step back and realize where we're heading. And we don't have to engage in that way. And we could actually just let it go. Or, you know, see it more clearly and, you know, drop the story of the whole thing.
But sometimes it's healthier not to let things go.
It doesn't mean not confronting difficult situations.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that. Because then we're back to this word prajna. This word's very important in Buddhism. P-R-A-J-N-A. And that means clear seeing, and therefore you know what the proper action is.
Okay.
So if something's happening that needs your direct attention, you do it. You take care of it. Whatever's needed, you do that.
Like if that guy had like looked straight at you and jumped in the pool and almost hit you.
Yeah.
Then you don't say, "Oh, well, I'm just getting irritated."
Right.
Get
no. No, I would call the lifeguard over. No, there would be a different action at that point. Yeah.
You were looking at all those don'ts here.
The don'ts.
Here's 133. Don't bring things to a painful point.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's a good question. Because sometimes you may have to have a painful conversation with someone to clear before you can move forward.
You may have to, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if you're self-righteous, then you could have a confrontation when you don't need to. So it's always, there's no formula. It's always wisdom, as Emily just said. But sometimes we can get too righteous, either with our Dharma teaching or with something else, and we want to teach someone a lesson.
Okay.
So, and we can feel the anger of it. So that don't bring things to a painful point. Don't do that.
And does this have the reverse also? You know, because you mentioned that sometimes we blame, want to put the blame out there, but some of us also have a tendency sometimes to blame ourselves.
Mm. There's probably one on that too. Let's look.
That's a form of idiocy.
yourself.
I think we used that term at one point earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, it does run through the Mahayana teachings that we can become sappy and just decide it's our fault because the world is dark, you know, it's cloudy and, you know, they're having a riot somewhere across the city or something. But, I mean, it's learning how to see clearly and training in a way to actually respond properly to situations. So it's not all about me. It's about how we are. That word discernment, prajna, another way of understanding discernment, which is a process. It's continuously refining our perceptions, or actually learning and willing to learn from every situation that arises.
Gosh, I don't know what that means.
That has to do with translating higher states of mind into forms of, this is one application, higher states of mind into basically writing people, things or people off, or using that as a pretext for dismissing. You know, again, we're talking about the presence of the three poisons and how they operate. Aggression is also rejecting. When you reject things, you're actually being aggressive. You dismiss things, or you basically castigate things, and have this kind of way of kicking yourself further upstairs, as it were, and using other people as the,
the steps.
The steps, exactly. For that. I'm sure I know there's more in that, particularly in the.
What's it say?
Referring to our tendency to dwell on pain and go through life with constant complaints. We should not make painful that which is inherently joyful. So that refers back to an earlier slogan, always maintain a joyful mind. And she gives teachings around that. At this point, you have achieved a certain level of taming yourself. You have developed a tonglen practice of exchanging yourself for others and feel that your achievement is real. But at the same time, you are so arrogant about the whole thing that your achievement begins to become an evil intention because you think you can show off. In that way, Dharma becomes a Dharma or non-Dharma. Although your achievement may be the right kind of achievement and you may actually have a very good experience, if you regard that as a way of proving yourself and building up your ego, it is not good.
Yeah.
One of the problems of Buddhism is arrogance, and it seems to be the chief fault that is developed. As the people, we all think we know something, and other people don't. And it translates very subtly, not always, sticking your nose up in the air. But that's one really important. We have a thing called Maras. Have you ever heard the term Maras? They're like demons, demonic forces. The arrogant one is a big one.
So does anyone have anything else on the slogans? I don't know if you feel encouraged in terms of wanting to go further with that, or if you felt like, oh no. But yeah,
I think it's an idea to maybe write them out on cards or something, and then randomly pick something for the day and see if that sort of you can carry that through for your day or something.
Yeah, sure, you could do that.
You could try that. The cards are for sale, by the way.
Oh,
yeah,
you okay.
can
buy
you can
them. Get the cards,
or,
okay?
Or you can write them out.
You can write them.
Yeah,
you can make your own.
You can put them on file cards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So next question is: when you're driving along, do you like to shuffle your thing? You don't have to shuffle. You can go. You can take them in order.
Mm-hmm.
You want to shuffle them? Okay, that could work.
Okay,
yeah, you could
all
do
right.
that.
Because I just I don't know, sometimes I do these things like with books where I'll just go boom like this,
right,
and I'll see if
right,
there's something that speaks to me right in that moment that
right,
I'm supposed to read, and a lot of times that works.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, that's good.
I don't know where, I can't find the ones I meant to bring in. They're nice cards, they're nicely printed, and they sit on one of these little holders, you know, that so you can put the whole stack there and you could rearrange them randomly or in order or however you want to go through them at whatever speed you want to.
And you can also, like if you make your own, you put, you can write on the back, for instance, what it really means, and, you know, write notes on them and stuff. That's another way to do it. You know, you could think about it, and you'd have, you really still need a book like training the mind. It's a more important
book. A lot deeper than...
Yeah. I mean, because really, Pema's just, you know, bringing out a few points within the book we're working with, so we're not going into too much detail, but I'd say training the mind,
this is
by Togyam Trungpa, is the basic one.
We'll put the reference up on there, along with the talk.
Yeah. Good. Any other points? Oh, any other mind training points? points? I wanted to just mention to people about the availability of meditation instruction and what that actually means, because I know it's hard to understand when we just say a few things about something and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's very traditional in Buddhist communities for people to have a chance to talk about their individual meditation practice with someone. Because what we give here is a more general instruction, but as you progress in your own practice, things change for you. And there are other techniques that we can offer depending on where someone is along the way in terms of their practice. So I have reached out to a few people and just mentioned that that was available to them, but I haven't, you know, sent everybody individual emails on that. So you can contact Michael Fagan, Michael Levin, or myself if you would like to do that. And usually the way it works is you would just schedule a time and meet with that person and basically talk about your practice and get information or feedback on that, and maybe pointers in terms of your meditation. So you're very welcome to do that. So it's just, and it's totally up to you with meditation instruction. You can start with one person and change to somebody else. You make the decisions, and you decide if you want to meet once a month or there's no schedule really. But sometimes people, when they're starting to meditate, sometimes it really helps to talk with someone more frequently because questions might come up and there's not really an opportunity to discuss it in the group situation here. So it gives you a chance to actually ask questions about your specific practice. And then often what happens later on, sometimes people don't really need that as much as they go along, or they'll move to some other person. So it's really up to you, totally up to you. But that is offered, so you're welcome to take advantage of it if you wish. And if you just want to know more about it, you can ask me and I can give you more instruction about what it is. So good. All right. So we will continue next week, and the chapter is called Chapter 17, Bodhisattva Activity. And this is on the topic of the six paramitas. So actually, again, this is a very big topic. She gives us like six pages. It's a big topic, but we'll dive into that. And we'll be revisiting these things again at another point. So we're just going to go through this book the way it is, and then we'll figure out what to do next. If you have suggestions about what you would like the classes to be or anything, just let us know. We're very interested in hearing from you, since we don't have a lot of chance to find out what you're thinking, except on the topics we're bringing up here. So please let us know through email or phone calls. So I think we conclude.